Поехали.
Welcome, Roxana.
Hi, Janine.
Hello.
Hi,
Roxana, Bob always calls you Roxy. Should I call you Roxy or Roxana?
As you like. I think it's just a way of being friendly.
More familiar, right?
Yeah, more familiar.
Do your friends call you Roxy?
They call me Rox.
I love that. Rox. I'm calling
like
you Rox.
Rock and roll, Rox, on the rocks, Rox.
Okay, well, then I'm calling you Rox. I like that. That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get to Iandom?
Well, I was always trying to understand what are we doing here, and I was just, like, researching about everything possible, like origins and UFOs and anything you can think of. And One day I found Ed Long's blog, Information Farm. There I found the cash flow. And once I started listening to Bob and Ion, I could not stop. I just like wanted to hear that nonstop. And that's how I discovered.
You also had a religious background, right? Because you had gotten kind of in the nun situation with your family. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, I always felt the spirit was like the most important. But now I would say non-physical is the most important. I mean, we don't have the words. We believe in false premises. We think, for example, the soul is the most important and the soul is only the recording. Because before we didn't know. But somehow in me, that was the most important thing to somehow evolve and to look for something higher or, and yeah, I think I found them in Ion.
Why do you think we've put so much stock in what Ion is saying?
Because it's knowing. It's not something you believe or faith or like the dogma. You know, like there is this prayer, El Credo, in which you declare what you believe, but this belief is not knowing. You just know that Ion is saying what it is, facts. I also had a lot of anomalies because they become normal. That's like a confirmation of what he's talking about. Is you start experiencing also these things, and yeah, the labyrinth of your mind is like trying to understand, and you just have to go on, see what's happening.
Give me an example of an anomaly that's become an anomaly.
I had many time anomalies. Like, I leave for work 1 hour before, always. And sometimes I'm there 30 minutes before, 30 minutes later. And I have to I have to say whatever, like, oh, my bike broke down or whatever. But I'm leaving at the same time, and I look at the computer, I look at the cell phone or whatever, and it's like, the same time, and I don't know what's going on. And once I had a very weird anomaly. I said, okay, I always go on this side of the street. Today I'm going to cross the street. I'm going to go on the other side of the street. So I cross the street. I always go with my bike. And all of a sudden, I could not recognize anything. It's Berlin, but I don't recognize. But I know I have to go in that direction, and I'm going to see a big building, and then I know where I am. And I go, and I don't see the building, and I'm just like going, 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 and I'm like, where am I? But after a while, I end up in the same place in which I said, today I'm going on this side of the street or whatever. And I was like, okay. Today I'm going, as always, on this side of the street. But I was like in shock, like, what happened there? Like, you don't understand. It's like, okay, I just go on. I don't want to think much about it. But then after a while you stop and it's like, what happened? It was like a very weird loop. It's always like a shock. Because your mind is trying to understand what happened.
Did you start noticing those anomalies right after you started listening to Ion, or were you noticing them before or after you started the drops, or what was the timing?
With the drops, especially on the first 2 years, they were happening very often. And there is always this shock because it's like your mind trying to understand.
So now it's gotten normal to you, or has it subsided?
I think when you stop resisting those things, it happens less. I was doing today one small video, and we mentioned that Bob disappeared because we were coming back home with the bikes, and all of a sudden I don't see him. And I'm like, where's Bob? And I stopped. I went back one block. I don't see him. I wait there for a while. I said, maybe he was so fast that he's already here in the building. I come, there's nobody here. I go back. I don't see him. I stay there for a while. I come back. I go back. And then there he was again. And he was like, where were you? And I was like, I was here. I came back. I was looking for you. And he was, no, I was just here because I didn't see you anymore. And he said he was just like going in circles there. And I was like, no, because I came back, I waited, I was here. And I was like, whoa. That was on the second day when he arrived.
We were going along, across an intersection near her place. I passed her, and then I crossed the intersection. Then I looked back, and she wasn't there. I went back and circled around that circle, waiting for Roxy to show up. I was screwed if she never showed up again. So I thought, oh, she fucking panicked. She can't take me. And she's dumped me. After a couple of days, she couldn't take it, whatever it was to take me. I said, I'm screwed. I can't even get my personal belongings. I don't know where she lives. I just sat there and waited. So I may have said, okay, I'm just going to stay here. Hopefully she'll turn up. And about 5 minutes later, it was a torturous 5 minutes of waiting. Thinking, how am I going to get out of this situation? I mean, I don't think I had my passport with me. Then all of a sudden she starts coming down the road towards me from where I would later learn was the home. I found out she'd gone all the way to her home. Did you go inside?
No.
She went and didn't see the bike, I guess, and so she started coming back towards the intersection, and there I was. I was greatly relieved when she showed up, but definitely she disappeared. And I didn't know that I had disappeared to her.
Yeah.
We both disappeared in each other. Subsequently, whenever we approached it, usually late at night, we'd be very careful going through that intersection. We were sure we didn't disappear again. But
there was another day we fell down.
Yes. Yeah, as we approached the corner, that I said, here's the dangerous corner. And so I grabbed her arm, sort of like we'd coast along together, as I was idling up beside her on our bikes. We're going pretty slow. And I lost my balance, and I pulled us both over. We did it right in front of a cafe, and these perverse Berliners at the cafe, at, you know, 2 in the morning, started laughing at us. All of a sudden, I heard somebody go, there they are! Her bike's lying on my bike. I look and I see a gang of kids running towards us. I don't know if you said they're gypsies or something, but
yeah.
The guy came over and he tried to grab at me, so I didn't trust him. I thought he was trying to grab at my wallet or something. And I said, wait a minute, because I didn't know how entangled Roxy was in the bike, and I didn't want to, you know, pull something and hurt her leg, you know, or just pull something. And Roxy, meanwhile, gets up pretty quickly and tells him to back off. She said it. They're barking at them. And I slowly untangle myself and get up, and they're backing off. And I found out later, she explained, they're gypsies, and they look to attack people and cause confusion and then steal something. So Roxy saved my life. But I'll never forget, they were quite in the distance, and all of a sudden I heard someone, there they are, let's get them. And the whole, like, 7 guy, little teenagers come running towards us like a swarm. And he started picking at me, and I said, no, no, back off, because I was thinking, we can't move anything quickly. Maybe Roxy's got her bike tangled up with her leg or something. But Roxy got out of it. She wasn't that entangled, and then she yelled at them and told them to back off. She's used to them. And the German people at the cafe are laughing their heads off during this whole scene. So
yes.
It happened again. We got screwed up again because we fell off our bike trying to prepare for the terrible transition through the intersection. We got nailed again. So the next time, we wouldn't say anything. We just, like, ignore the fact that it's anomaly land and learn to not create it. And I yelled something at the Berliners. I said, we'll be back again tomorrow for a matinee performance or something like that. Do you remember you saying something to Roxy at these people? I went into put-on mode and started hamming it up for the cafe people. But we didn't get hurt. I got a couple of scrapes, but that was it. I didn't know I wasn't that good on a bike. I thought I could hold her. I was joking. Okay, we're going through the portal, so let me hold you. We must hold on to each other as we go through. And I lost my balance holding my bike with one hand. I almost killed Roxy, for fuck's sake.
We survived each other.
Yes, we survived each other. And so we would have had no videos. It would have been a very sad experience.
How was it that you did get hooked up with Bob Roxana?
Well, on the 8th of March, I was with some friends in a gallery, and all of a sudden I heard Ion's voice in my head. But he was, like, on top of other voices, like male and female, and they were all talking at the same time. I would look at somebody, and they will tell me things about this person. I was, like, in shock. So I started saying things aloud, like, I don't want to know. I will close my eyes. I don't want to know. And some friends said, what's going on? Because I was, like, shouting, because I was so in shock. Maybe they thought I took something. They were, like, amused, like, what are they saying? And they were asking things like that. This thing went the whole night. It was, like, very personal, and I was like, I don't want to know those things about anybody. It's none of my business.
What was the first words that you heard?
I don't remember exactly the first words, but there was a point where I was even singing, and they would tell me, what are they saying? I asked them something that they want to tell me, to tell us. And Ian said, just enjoy, have fun. We were so loud that somebody came to complain, a neighbor, because this place is in a building. The person from the gallery and the neighbor started fighting, and I heard Ian saying just to leave now. And a couple were leaving at that moment, and Ian said, just follow them or go with them. I was following them, and they were like, why are you following us? And I was like, you are not going to believe me, but I'm hearing these voices, and they tell me to follow you. For some reason, I cannot go to my house. I'm following you.
They said, do you want to have sex with us? Typical Berliner reality.
Yeah, they thought I was going with them for some other reason, and I said, no, I just have to follow you. I don't know what's going on. I was, like, really scared. They say, okay, but you can stay only on the floor. And I was like, okay, I don't care. But I was so in shock. I could not understand what's going on. And when I was there, Ian said, report to Bob. And I was like, why? And he said, you agreed to do this before you came forth. And I was like, to do what? They didn't say it, but I think it has to be in gaining your power back or something like that, because the word was in my mind, like the power. And I didn't report.
Yes, you didn't report.
I was very scared, and I was like, I'm hallucinating, and I don't think Bob is going to believe me or anything. I was just very scared.
You have to realize Jeannie Roxy, as I came to learn, she's a very cool character. It's like you keep yourself cool in social situations, Jeannie. You know, it was shocking for Roxy to make herself basically be humiliated in front of people like this. It's like Hillary Clinton or someone just started, you know, losing her cool and talking. You have to understand that Roxy is not this kind of person. So it was very strange for her to act like this in front of her friends. And to report to Bob, I thought that was the first thing said to you in the gallery, but it was over at the other people's home that you heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And remember, this is International Women's Day, March 8th. I always remember March 8th, International Women's Day, because it was a big deal at CKLN. No males were allowed on the radio that day. And when Mike Dyer left the show in early 91, February 91, I thought I'd continue with another host. But I got a call that day from the Lesbian Caucus, and they told me I'm not on this day. And I said, well, I'll be back next month. And they said, no, you're not coming back, Bob. So that was the end of my career, though I got another guy to do five more months, once a month, Wayne Morris. He let me on his show where I played nothing but evergreens. I wanted to do that. So I managed to sneak in five more shows till August, but the Lesbian Caucus had finally gotten rid of me. The last bastion of male integrity was knocked off, and it was on International Women's Day, so I consider it very significant that this happened to her. We take this archetypal woman here who I invaded International Women's Day. That's my personal take on the thing.
But that was not the end of the story, because then Bob called, and I almost had a heart attack, like,
Did I give any warning? How did I have your number? Or did I email you?
Yes, you emailed and then you
called. You gave me your number or something.
Yes, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I suppose, yeah.
But this is just a week later, Jeannie. I'm realizing I'm going to Europe, and I thought, well, I want to see Berlin. And I said, this strange person or very quiet person in Berlin, maybe I could visit her, not stay with her, but just meet her. So I emailed her, and I told her to be confidential. Don't tell anybody I'm traveling, but would you meet up with me? And I didn't know, and she didn't tell me that she was in shock when this happened.
Because just a week earlier, you had heard report to Bob.
Yeah. And I had not talked to her in 3 years since her private session.
When I had my session, I was in a deep crisis. I think it was not that good. But I also called because on the first day I took the drops.
Spring 2011.
Yes, it was, I think, April. And on the first night, I heard the voice telling me, you're healed, in Spanish, very clear, very loud. And I was also in shock, like, what was that? So I called to ask Ion, who was that? That voice that said, I'm healed. And he said, it was myself. That was the first day I took the drops. I think that triggered like a very strong process. Everything changed very fast in my life. Everything. I started the drops and I had decision with Diane, and everything was changing, because I think this process of healing has to do with detoxing all your environment. It's not only your physical body. It's everything around you. Like, if anything is causing some disturbance or is affecting you in some way, it's also going to affect your health. So So I understand now that health is not only your physical, it's everything around you, the persons, the situations, your whole environment.
What you can see, your outer kingdom.
Yes, the outer kingdom. And there were some things I could not understand in the session, but like, for example, after a week, I was like, oh, okay, now I get that. Because my ex-boyfriend, he was a painter, or he is, I don't know, he was painting two dogs fighting. And Ion told me in Spanish during the session, los perros malos are leaving, like the bad dogs are leaving. And after a week, he was gone. And during the session, I was like, what? What? But I think he doesn't energize these negative or bad things, whatever, but he hints. And maybe in that moment you don't understand what he's talking about, but then I was like, wow. Because those things are things that, I mean, how could he know that?
What do you say Ion is to you?
Well, it's so big, it's hard to put in words. Because it's hard to define the all-knowing or the non-physical that is talking back to us.
You had psychic experiences before, and, you know, so you know what I mean?
It was more my dreams. I have, like, very, very lucid dreams. For example, I can smell people in my dreams when they talk to me, or I smell the earth, the plants, the things around me, or I eat and I smell the food. Ion told me I really go like a parallel world, like often. And since I'm a child, I have three sisters and a brother. None of them wanted to sleep with me. And also, I was married and I had a boyfriend. They will have to sleep somewhere else because they could not sleep with me for some reason.
I just want to add something. Note that Ion speaks to her in Spanish. That's herself. That's her Spanish self. You know what I mean? When herself talked to herself, it was in Spanish. What did Ion say to you in Spanish? Oh, yeah, that you have planned this before. Or you planned this before you came, right, Roxy? Is that what he said in Spanish?
Said different things. And sometimes also he says things in German.
When he said to you the idea of why am I healed or whatever, you said, who said blah, blah, blah? And Ion said it was yourself talking to yourself. That was said in Spanish, that sentence. But the idea that you came, you made this agreement before you came, I've never heard Ion talk about what's been said or determined before you're born. That's a whole new topic. So he's implied, I don't know, it's a bit vague, like the souls or the entities in the Gav see things that are non-manifested and then they want to participate in them. But you kind of get the feeling that the soul, that the entity that's born, and that's not reincarnating, there's no pre-knowledge, though sometimes Ion implies it. That's, he said to Roxy, it's the first time something concrete about what you're doing before you're born has happened. You know, it's the first time I've ever heard that. That needs to be explored. How much do people arrange things before? Because I think I've heard people ask, do you pick your parents before you're born? And I think they said no.
So let me take a break here, and we'll come back for the second hour. And we'll be back here in just a minute after a station identification and some wonderful music that Roxanne is going to explain to us why she selected this after we listen to it. All right, we'll be right back, everybody. it occurs to me that in the first hour I did not ask you to introduce your song clip, which was very cool. It was People Playing Ice. So talk a little bit about that and why you selected that as your intro song.
I enjoy music in many ways, and I find it very interesting that people can use the whole environment, anything, to make music. And these are just people in a frozen lake playing with the ice.
Not last week, but the week before, so October 18th, I asked Roxy to contribute some music, and she contributed these, looks like Africans, smacking the water. They're up to their waist in water, and they're playing the lake or the beach, playing the water.
This is also frozen water, and that was liquid water.
Yes, yeah.
If you're looking for it on YouTube, it's B-A-I-K-A-L, ICE, I-C-E, live sound, playing frozen water on the deepest and oldest lake, B-A-I-K-A-L. It's okay. In Siberia. It's a rift in the south of the Russian region of Siberia. It's very pretty, this lake. Okay, and then this hour, you came in with some wonderful mystical music, and this is Jacot Cholet, J-A-C-O-T-T-E.
Jacot Cholet.
Cholet. Let's talk about this a little bit.
Well, she's a female French composer. She makes electronic music. I'm into electronic music. But this is not like a very abstract electronic music. It's more ambient. And she has a concept, it's called multidimensional music, multidimensional. She thinks sound affects your health, and she's trying to do music that heals people. But I like it.
When you were listening to the voices in the museum, the male and female voices, this was an experience that you had had as a child, so it was somewhat familiar to you. Am I saying that accurately?
Well, when I was 17 years old, I heard these female and male voices talking at the same time, and they just told me, you have to prepare, but that was it.
And you told me that you would ask people, do you have this experience? Did you have voices that told you to prepare? Do you have any idea what I was supposed to prepare for? She actually asked many people this. Right, Roxy?
Everybody. Anybody. Everybody.
Trying to figure out what the hell. Did I miss the meaning? What is this about? And that goes on for almost 30 years. And then in the gallery, she's taken the drops first time, and these are potent drops because it's earlier this year, the new improved drops or the reset drops, and you begin by hearing those voices for the first time, right, Roxy? They've come back.
Yes, but with Ion, so I suppose that was planted before, so that when that happened again, I was like, okay, this is...
This is significant. So Ion comes in over the voices.
Yeah.
So when you heard the voice again, Roxy, that was startling to have that experience 30 years later. Like you're going, wow. And then it's confused or overlaid by Ion describing the people in the gallery and particulars about them.
Yes, because I was just like in shock. Like, okay, here are the voices with Ion. And like, I think it's just a hallucination.
You have to understand the Berlin culture, Ginny. She's following this couple home, and they go, oh, do you want to have sex with us?
Yeah, I can see where that would be
and
a little
I was
odd.
All freaked out, like, no.
No, I do not want to.
I was, like, crying, like, ah.
You were crying?
Yes.
And how did you get home to your own place the next day?
I just walk. It's not that far from here.
Oh, okay.
From where I live.
You were able to walk. You recovered from the night. The voices
stopped.
Yes, the
night was actually very nice. It was very sunny, very nice.
So sometime early in the morning, the voices and Ion stopped.
Yeah.
The other thing that we talked about was this process of starting to make the recordings about Bob and everything.
Let me evoke that. I heard Roxy, she was saying, I wanted to catch all that Bob was saying so I could listen again. And then Roxy goes, now I, what's that thought, Roxy?
Yeah,
now what?
I realized how much we did every day. For example, we have some videos where taking breakfast on the first day. And then today I was doing another one. You're talking about activism. That was also the same day after you disappeared.
Oh, is that right? That is at 2 in the morning or something.
Yes, and we went to the museum, to the bookstore, eating.
We did a lot that day.
All over Berlin.
Yes, so she was recording a lot
day.
On the first day. I showed up at 11 at night, August 4th, and I always like to say the day McLuhan got married in 1939, and she's recording me within 12 hours all day long.
No, but after we recorded this last one that you're talking about activism.
Yeah.
Like you say, don't lose your aristocratic cool and love. After we heard the program of Caroline.
Oh, we listened to Carol's medical program the Monday, and I'm hearing it on Tuesday. That's part of the day, too. I see, yeah.
Yes.
We that's
so I was like, wow.
Even you were impressed or something about the amount we were recording.
Yes, that's why I say it was like a Bob Fest, because we did a lot. There is much more.
Right, the ones that she just started to edit. You saw one, it's way back there, where I'm just sitting in a chair. Actually, it looked pretty tired to me in that one that's already been offered. But every night, whenever we get home from what we were doing, I'd sit down and she'd ask me some questions, and we record that. And we're going to present those without music. She might do them again with music, but they're just raw me explaining. And she started saying that, this is incredible, Bob. You're making so much sense. You're explaining these things very well. So she started to have a sense of learning stuff. And that was because we made a point of recording every night in one of her rooms.
Roxana, when you sat down to start doing the videos and capturing all the information and then you're replaying it, is this new for you to make videos and do this kind of thing?
No, I always like making pictures and videos. No, but we actually planned to make one, and I thought, okay, I'll record, and then I'll take from this and that. But everything was good, so it's like when he left, I had 129 files, video files.
Once we got like April, May, June, and we're talking about what we do in Berlin, I was interested in what cultural things to go to. She looked stuff up, and then she found that there was a festival, and she said, let's make a video and submit it to some festival. So we knew we were going to do something, but we didn't know it would be museums and interviews and casual stuff. We thought we were going to do something. That was planned, but Roxy thought it would just be one video project, you know, a 15-minute video or something.
So out of the videos that you made, one of my favorite is the iCell, the Club 418, and Bob. I love that one.
That is done the next morning. That's August 5th. I'm sitting on the balcony. She's made a wonderful meal. What do they call them?
Quesadilla.
And I'm sitting there with her Japanese kimono on, and discussing the people who are taking
because
pictures.
Because we have to do the laundry. We have to do the laundry.
Oh, yeah, that's the laundry that Karen was outraged when I called in that Monday and said, you know, I hadn't done my laundry in 2 weeks, and I actually threw some of it away. It was so bad. But the thing is, I'm sitting on the balcony, Ginny, and that's where I'm talking about the pictures were being taken of me early that morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't even know Roxy really at this point when those ones are being done.
Bob, as you pointed out many times, you don't need to really know people in order to speak to them effectively about different topics.
Yes, I don't care who I'm talking to.
Maybe because I've been listening to you for so long, I sort of felt like I know you forever.
She would ask good questions. Natural questions that would come out of listening to me.
I thought we would take a minute And I'm actually going to play the iCell, the Club 418, and Bob. So we're going to play that file, and then we will come back and talk about it.
Yeah, McLuhan, he's explaining Finnegan's Wake. Finnegan's Wake is what you have to see and perceive before you can go into the ascended mind. It's the last, most complex. The mind loves complexity. It's also simple, so it's simplex. All that perception of culture that the wake represents. When you can see that, then you have completed your mind. You have arrived at the...
It's like the climax of the visual.
Climax, yeah. Visual and acoustic. And you start to see the tactile. So when you see that, have done that, then you can give up your mind. So yes, McLuhan is explaining the wake. So understanding McLuhan is the last effort of the mind. Right? So he's important up to that point.
Okay. I thought that was very interesting that you said that Finnegan's Wake is what you have to see and perceive before you can go into the ascended mind.
Controversial statement. See, I say we got physical, non-physical, and labyrinth of the mind. That's what Ayn says. Ayn has said the mind is very dominant. It will not tolerate things unless it's okay with it. So we have a dominant mind. So it sounds like to me, you have to understand the role of your mind. It's one third of you. It's not everything, but it is on the board, and it has a say. And I find that the what Ayn, how it presents itself, how it describes itself, is exactly presented in Finnegan's Wake. It is written like a simultaneous happening. It's no linearity, no time in Finnegan's Wake. And you need to be able to see the book and Finnegan's Wake and all that it means, and much of it is explained by McLuhan, to actually perceive how your eye and mind are part of you. And that's a test. If you look at Finnegan's Wake and you I can't read it, there's no sequence, then you still think and still depend on the effect of the printed book, that there's linearity. And I am saying there is no linearity. And you have to have the overlay. And the overlaying is the way Finnegan's Wake is written. So I find Finnegan's Wake is an act of perception. And that's how you learn what your mind is limited by, what it's expanded by, why you're fascinated by, and how you're fooled by media. You have to be able to see through media. And that's why McLuhan said Finnegan's Wake is the greatest guide to media ecology and environmental effects ever produced by man. The point is that you have to be able to read Finnegan's Wake for a fully comprehensive knowing mind, which would be one third of you.
Basically, what you're saying is if you can dialogue with the book to pick up on all the puns, the different interactions, the non-linearity part of it, the lyrical aspect of it, and actually be able to enjoy that, not be frustrated and agitated by the fact that it doesn't follow a standard format and all the other things. That's the beginning
right.
of that mind.
Yeah, that you are not fooled by the outer kingdom. You know exactly what Ayn's saying the outer kingdom is part of, the middle kingdom and the inner kingdom, because Ayn's always playing your future placed in your past so then you could see it now and your now is back then. Well, he's always doing that rapid playing with now, then, and present, future, past. That's exactly the way Finnegan's Wake is written. Ayn's explaining that's reality, or humans have made that, and Joyce is trying to show that. He's making a story and showing how the effects precede the causes and it was already happening before. How would you write that? I think he does a good job of showing what Ayn's trying to say is real.
It makes me think about how the Bible was important for millennia. All our civilization was around this book, and then the Finnegan's Wake is like demolishing this importance of the book. The Emerald Tablets are, like Ayn says, something that was planted in the past that is
yeah.
actually from the future.
Yes. Now, did you listen to the Revelation series?
Not all.
Okay. When we do the Bible with Ayn, like even in Genesis, when we start looking at chapter and verse, it becomes crazy. And when you start to know the actual meanings, you realize the Bible is exactly like Finnegan's Wake. It's a jumble of ridiculous collaging of ideas. So I now realize Finnegan's Wake is a perceptual training for seeing the Bible. the Bible is like Finnegan's Wake, but people were trained to read it linearly and couldn't see the Finneganese in it because it's so mixed up when you actually know what it's about.
It's not in this sequence. We are going to the Garden of Eden.
Right, but when you read a verse, one sentence in the verse is ridiculous to the next verse. And the more you understand what it is, it's even more ridiculous. It's like it's incomprehensible, the Bible. It is like when one looks at Finnegan's Wake. And for some reason, people thought they understood what it was saying and had a linear idea about the meaning of Scripture. But I think they go hand in hand, Finnegan's Wake and the true interpretation of the Bible, if you believe Ion.
Ion said that the Bible and Finnegan's Wake were bookends, and within that bookends was the completion of the entire literate bias.
I think you're right. I think Ion did say Finnegan's Wake was the bookends of the Bible, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's press on and listen to a little bit more, and then we'll just see where this takes us. Here we go.
It's the last, most complex. The mind loves complexity. It's also simple, so it's simplex. All that perception of culture that the wake represents. When you can see that, then you have completed your mind. You have arrived at the...
It's like the climax of the visual.
Climax, yeah. Visual and acoustic. And you start to see the tactile. So when you see that, have done that, then you can give up your mind. So yes, McLuhan is explaining the wake. So understanding McLuhan is the last effort of the mind, right? So he's important up to that point. And then after that, when you can start manifesting things like we're doing here, you understand why Ion says the mind goes into the autonomic system, not up here. It's flowing around you. It's manifesting. So,
McLuhan said, the electric is an extension of the
central nervous system.
And what will be Coldplay?
The non-physical, which is the bliss state that you die into. The substance of the guff. Because we created non-physical when we started to fall. You know, when we got irritated at being ascended. So we decided to make ourselves unascended. So when we got descended, we then needed an anti-environment or relief, so we created the guff, a place to die into, to have bliss, to bounce off the pain of consciousness. And the pain of consciousness was the result of descending. So the I cell, to me, is substance from the guff, the non-physical, that little man requires. Ascended people don't require the eye cell. They've got more than the eye cells. Those like Abraham's partner, Sarah, Saint Germain, Ezekiel, Elijah, all those guys, the two Jesuses, they didn't die. They've got the eye cell substance and more in them.
I thought it was interesting that you said that the ascended person doesn't require the eye cell, although Ion said that you would continue to crave it.
So that's a case where I will say a statement to a neophyte, someone I'm perceiving as new, make a statement knowing it's wrong or incomplete, and then later I will add the other half-truth in that. Because I think that Ion is something new, and the 418 group and the ascended people are forced to now get off their lofty position and interact. Ion has said just to monitor the chaos and the craziness the little man's creating because the little man's starting to ascend. This is affecting the bureaucracy. It's like affecting the Pope. You know, he can't stay in his little room anymore. The 418 group, they are being forced to engage with Ion in the present. And I think that when we do Ion every Saturday, we are going to a new dimension and you are to swim in it and experience it. It's new every week. That is more becoming happening. Even though you're pretty ascended and ascending, it doesn't mean you just sit back on a plateau and you've arrived and you're in a static, enlightened state. It's an endless creativity, and Ion has come forth to create. And that's what I stress is we are missing the opportunity on payday to do that. by our inadequate preparation and silly questioning. We don't recognize that we are creating every week, and that means the ascended people have to be involved in it too.
What is your idea of being properly prepared for payday?
Well, I noticed in the God Guys, I made a post on Dupes about this. If I listen to the God Guys, they'll come up with good questions. I never hear Allison or Sheila or Deb call in with the question. They don't even write it down, or they don't seem to. They talk themselves into a conundrum, and they go, yes, we should ask Ion that. They never do. I call that, what's the word, derelict. Derelict abandonment of a fucking responsibilities of your creating stuff in your dialogue in the Radio Gagas, and you don't come in and continue it. We have not heard from Allison in fucking months. And they should be noting the questions that they develop and bring them in because they're good questions. When I talk to people privately, questions come up, and I said, write it down and ask it. I have never heard anybody do that based on our conversations. And I say we're wasting our time because it's in conversation with someone who's interested in the topic where you do reach questions. And they should be written down and asked Ion. That's what Ion's there for, just to hear Ion's ridiculous, confusing answer. You know what I mean? We're not going to maybe figure out what Ion said, but we make Ion say new stuff. That's part of being ascended and creating within ascension.
Do you think that there are members of the 418 group that are taking the drops?
Oh, yeah.
And what about calling into the show? Are they calling in? Are they listening? How are they participating?
Ion said to me, I don't think we played this, said to me the other day, well, those guys who were doing that in the market, remember Greenbra brought up the 12 bankers who committed suicide?
Yeah.
So that's on the show. I asked a question about that, and I said, yes, one of them had a private session. And I go, oh, yeah, the Barclays guy. You know, there was this banker guy who called in, did several sessions, very advanced financial talk, and Ion would just, you know, be on that level. And that guy told me later, you know, 6 months later, man, what Ion said is true. It came true what he said, what our bank had to do. That's an example of the quality of people who have come in and talked, and we didn't know what they were part of or what they really were doing. So not necessarily this guy was a 418 group, but it's interesting they were trying to do something with what I call the 4X formula that we learned on Rewrite. He said they were so frustrated that they offed themselves, which is a whole other story. Why would they get so screwed up that they have to kill themselves as a group phenomenon? But thanks to Greenbrush, I didn't even know the story. She noticed the story. But that's the example of we have many people listening, never saying a word, but monitoring this. Maybe they don't even listen to the live thing. They listen to the archives. And Ion's always said more people in other worlds listen to the show than this world.
Roxanna, what's true for you? How do you prepare for payday? What is your favorite part? What do you enjoy? How do you enjoy participating?
Well, before this experience, I enjoy just learning and listening.
Before what experience?
They're reporting to Bob. I was happy just listening and learning.
Right, until the report to Bob this year. You were changed this year in relation to Iandom.
I felt I had to participate more because I hear many people, for example, say they don't understand what you're talking about. And one of the things I'm trying to do is to explain what I understand in a simple way. And many people send me messages and tell me, oh, now I get, for example, the visual space, this or whatever. I think they were just blocking themselves when they start hearing these patterns, these ideas, these words that are so new. They just block themselves and they don't listen. But
they will listen during pretty videos. They can look at Bob's face real close up, right? And that allows them to pay attention.
To see you. And because you're talking to me, it's like you're talking to them.
Yeah.
And I also try to take myself out as much as possible, like to take this when I'm talking or making the question, to have this intimacy with whoever is listening to that. They tell me they feel like you're talking to them.
Yeah. I think the people that been around enough, it's about time they understood something about what they're experiencing. You know, and maybe that doesn't come until they're ready, but I think they're
yes,
holding off being ready.
Had,
they're resisting
another,
being ready.
I had another anomaly that also made me participate.
Yeah.
Once I turned my computer on, and there was Ion talking about how important it is to participate and talk. And I was like, hey, I don't have anything on. Like, I just turned it on, and there was already the voice of Ion coming out. And I was like standing, just looking at my computer like 2 meters away.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is he talking about? And it was about it's important to participate and talk. And
there was nothing on. Okay. She had not clicked any Ion recording on.
No, no. I just turned my computer on and this comes out. And I was like, wow.
You know, Ginny, when people say, when it came, I was ready, or I'm not going to do it till I'm ready, I think you should push that a little bit. Like, I don't think you should do any one thing. Okay, I'm not ever going to make an effort. I will just let it happen. No, you make an effort. You contradict yourself. You play with your consciousness. So you force yourself to listen. Then that will create the moment when you are going to get it.
I'm very impatient. And English is not my mother tongue. So I was like, oh, I don't want to bother people with my accent or
right.
whatever. Because I will not have the patience to listen to myself.
So, yeah.
So I thought it would be disturbing, but then I'm just like there.
Yes, you were self-conscious about your speaking, and that kept you back. And so once we got together and I didn't mind her speaking the way she was, then she relaxed about her accent. And now she's a regular question person on payday.
Right. After you listen for a while, you don't hear the accent. You're just listening for the words and the communication
yes.
and the accent.
Personative. You're listening for the transpersonative, which is my theory about when people see my body communicating or in person, I have a transpersonative, which is what Cosmic Awareness has said. I have a way of what I mean happens on an ESP level. People get it when I'm in person because my transpersonative ability is happening. It's almost like whatever I'm trying to get them to understand, the mechanism of matching and understanding is universal, or it's actually in every sentence. Anytime you understand anybody, you're activating your ability to transcend yourself and take in some other God's statement. Maybe that's what I activate in person. It's actually exactly McLuhan's statement. It's not the content of what I say, it's the medium. And so I communicate of matching, the phenomenon of thinking you understand the person.
Bob, I love what you said in the one video, and there are a lot of videos that you've done, Roxanne. How many have you posted so far?
I think 30. Today I did 2.
Well, I love the
the quadrophrenia and the activism.
So you hadn't done activism yet.
Yeah, it just got done. I haven't even
heard it. It just got done. I thought activism that you were talking about was the one that you did from Babylon to Babylon.
Yeah, we're calling this the room series. This is where at 2 in the morning, when we came home from whatever we did, we'd sit down in one of her rooms. I'm sitting there in the chair, and I'm defining things. She would ask basic questions. We got a whole bunch of those. We're not going to put music over them. All she has to do is chop up what she has. They're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have to put words in, and then I have to correct the punctuation. We don't have to go through that process. She could put out 10 videos over the next 2 days easily, right, Roxy, if it's the room stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's geared to explaining and clarifying terms, whereas I'm making up probing in the museums.
It's like we were doing some sort of edutainment, advertisement.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's what the project ended up being, not a one video to flash in a festival. it ended up to be edutainment. And there was the sit back and the terms I'd used, and that would be in the room. And then there would be the making of perceptions on the spot in museums.
Mm-hmm. And I think even if you have been listening and you understand all these things, there's always something more that Bob adds in every
topic.
For example, I asked him to explain quadrophrenia, and he's like talking to a 4-year-old like, this is so basic. But then he adds something like how each body, like he says, the physical body is
fascist.
Fascist.
Yeah.
The
astral body's communist.
Communist. And so he adds something else
every time. And in that sense, I'm like Ion. If Ion gets everything from us, he's doing Bob the way Ion changes each time he adds something different to the definition.
We're coming to the top of the hour, so we need to take another break, and then we'll be back. Was a clip, P.A. Jesu. Roxana, tell us about that beautiful song.
Yeah, that's my mystical side, the non-manque, like Bob says. I wanted to become a nun, and I really enjoy all these type of music. It's from Gabriel Fauré. It's a French composer, 19th century. And it's sung by a male soprano called Philippe Jaruski. It's a male voice.
Did you listen also to Tildegard and some of the chants and all those other kinds of things? Do you enjoy that music as well?
Yeah, Tildegard from Bingen and all these nuns were like my idols.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful.
I also like Orthodox music. They have very beautiful harmonies.
Bob calls you a real Mexican princess. What is that about?
Well, I think because my family on my mother's side, they were like very aristocratic. They own a lot of land in Spain, in Navarra. There is a place called La Reina, and in Mexico, in Chiapas, there is also a place called La Reina, and they own all those lands. In the 19th century, my great-great-grandfather offered the throne of Mexico to the emperor, Maximilian von Habsburg, because there had been a war with the United States, with the elite in Mexico thought they needed to have allies in Europe, like a prince or something, otherwise maybe Mexico will disappear, because after the war with the Americans, more than half the territory was lost. That's why they thought it was a good idea to get a prince, an European prince, so that the Americans will be less aggressive.
So you're saying your great-grandfather presented the throne to Maximilian.
He was a diplomat. He was ambassador in America and in the Vatican and in other countries. His daughters, because he was in the Vatican, became nuns. They say they could see ghosts, and that's why they became nuns. And they grounded an order called Las Hijas del Calvario, like the Daughters of the Calvary, I think, that still exists, and they have everything, schools, convents, everything, in many countries.
Is this the two greats grandfather?
Yeah, his name was Manuel Larrainzar, and the daughter was Enriqueta and Ernestina Larrainzar.
And you can Google them on Wikipedia. You can read about her great-great-grandfather.
There are many things about the nuns, because they were traveling and writing in the 19th century.
There are PhDs she sent me on, you know, modern PhDs about women writers in the 19th century, and they all mention her great-great-aunts as writers of their travels, because they traveled a lot with their father, went all over the place.
Yeah, because he was an important
diplomat.
He was everywhere.
Go ahead.
My great-grandfather was in the Vatican, and he was a great diplomat. For example,
so he's kind of like...
negotiation. When the Americans wanted to build the Transoceanic Communication Canal that afterward they built in Panama, they wanted to build in Mexico in the 19th century, and he made the negotiation to stop that.
He knew it would change the nature of Mexico if the canal went through Mexico.
So he was really good doing...
Right, and you know there's a South African publisher right now republishing his many writings, right now, for some reason. There's a painting on Wikipedia somewhere of the Mexican delegation presenting the crown to Maximilian or whoever
Maximilian.
It was. And her great-great-grandfather is in the painting.
Yes, cool. Was the one who talked with him.
The one who's in front holding the crown?
Yeah, the one who was in charge.
Right, of the delegation.
This empire only lasted 3 years, and the people that worked with the emperor were supposed to be killed, or how do you say?
After the empire collapsed.
Yeah, and so they had to exile themselves. And that's why then my family was here in Berlin, and that's why I came also.
They came to Germany for a while. That would be the time of the American Civil War in 1850s, 1860s. They went to Berlin for a few decades, is what you're saying.
No, when my great-grandfather was in the Vatican, the brother was here in Berlin. The brother was Federico Larrainza. He was here. And when the empire ended, my great-great-grandfather came here with the brother.
And he lived there for how long?
He was here, but he will go to Mexico, like, incognito. They will go
incognito
to Guatemala, yeah, and enter via Guatemala.
Right.
Chiapas.
Why were they in exile, though? I didn't understand that part.
They lost, the empire was imposed on Mexico, on the peasants or whatever, and it collapsed after 3 years. The aristocrats who had supported the empire were subject to being, executed. And so they disappeared. They hid. But what happened to the wife and kids? Did they stay in Mexico?
You mean from the emperor or from what?
No, your great-great-grandfather had to go in exile.
No, they were nuns, so I suppose they were not executed.
But the male, your great-great-grandfather, had to leave Mexico. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but then, because at the time there was not such control as now, they could go back all the time.
They could come in incognito. And so the family stayed there. And he's the only one who left. The daughter stayed there, and they carried on with the aristocratic lifestyle.
No, because they were nuns.
Yes, so they were able to stay. And are you saying that the only descendants of your family come from the nuns, the daughters?
No. My great-grandfather and my grandfather were born here in Berlin.
So your great-grandfather's in Mexico. He sets up the throne. It collapses, and he goes back to Berlin. And then what happens? He sneaks back in, and they keep living in Chiapas in incognito?
No, they were here in Germany, but they kept their possessions in Mexico.
But he tended to be, from that point on, invisible.
Yes.
But his sons and daughters carried on living with their aristocratic lifestyle in Mexico.
Yes, the son stayed here in Berlin, and my grandfather was born here in Berlin. And the sisters, well, the daughters, were nuns. They were in their convent.
But how does it continue back in Mexico?
Because of the Second World War, my great-grandfather went back.
All right, so they're not there. The males are not there for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not in Spain. But the daughters are there. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, but they were nuns.
So the nuns owned the property? Owned the big estate? The family legacy?
I think they have, like, their share.
But see, your great-grandfather and grandfather and father all were aristocrats. That's how you grew up. You grew up with maids.
Yes. It was like,
as you said to Ginny, it's complicated, the whole history.
Yes.
Were you born in Mexico, Roxanne?
No, I was born in Mexico City.
Your father, was he born in Mexico City too?
Yes.
So your father and you were born in Mexico City, and by the time you were born, the grandfather, your father's father, had returned to Mexico because of World War II.
No,
and
that
had gone.
My mother's family.
That's the mother's side.
My father's family was always in Mexico.
So they stayed, and they did their, even after your grandfather's on your mother's side, is what you're saying.
Is your father's side aristocratic?
Yes, but they were Toltec.
Toltec, they had that kind of prestige.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so your mother's side is just complicated, incognito, secretive stuff is on your mother's side. But your father came through an impressive family socially on his own.
Yes, the family from my father were producing a very sacred drink called pulque in a very sacred place where the Virgin of Guadalupe is supposed to be up to appear. And since very ancient times, that was the place where the earth was worshipped. So it was like a very important place. It's called El Tepeyac. And I know only the royalty, the Toltec royalty could do that, this pulque thing. They were doing that until my father, he stopped this tradition.
So it's almost shamanistic what we're talking about, Ginny. Her father's ancestors were part of the royal shamanistic ritual, sacred stuff.
Of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico, which is very important.
Well, in that place that...
Yes,
yeah.
She appears. In one of the places that she appears, because she appears in more than one place, yes?
Yes, like a small mountain, a very small mountain called El Cerro del Tepeyac. But before her appearance, it was always sacred, and that was the place where all the people in this area worshiped the earth.
The earth.
Yeah.
So what you have here is a local Toltec ancestry and European oligarchic ancestry come together in Roxana.
Yes, but I think many people in Mexico is like that. You know, we're a mixture of both.
Another thing, Ginny, is that her great-grandparents, they come from the Basques because the Spanish king did not want the regular monarchy, oligarchs and dukes and whatever around them to get power in Spain. So they sent the minority Basque guys. Maybe they were aristocrats in the Basque world, but there's all these Basque roots in the Mexican oligarchy.
Well, in whole Latin America, because also the Basque were not conquered by the Arabs.
They considered this normal Spanish aristocrats polluted by the Arabs.
Elite in Latin America is Basque.
What impact did this have on your lifestyle as you were growing up in the midst of all this merger?
Well, I have a very weird grandfather. He was a vegetarian, and he was into esoteric things, and he was into yoga, and he grew up with all these European aristocratic education, but he was also like very alternative in many ways. I think he had a big influence on me because he was weird. He was very eccentric. And I like that, actually. And I grew up in Coyoacán. It's a very nice neighborhood. It's like a small town inside Mexico City. And before it was even more like a small town. And many artists were living there. Frida House was near my house. She was already dead, but I would go there and play in her garden. And she was not that famous at the time.
Frida Kahlo.
So I could be there on my own. And the guardians will say, don't be here on your own because the ghost appears. And Mondays when they close, they say they heard Frida crying and shouting. But she never appeared.
Because you would be there on Monday. You checked it out. You snuck in.
No, she was never there. But that was cool.
You're hearing the adults. That's your first, like, lie. These adults are bullshitting me. That affects your sense of independence, right?
Yes. I felt many things were not right and true in general because I wanted to become a nun, and then I saw the institution was of the church was so corrupt, and I saw the church is not spiritual, so it's like a big,
you know,
trauma.
What was the last word?
Trauma?
Yeah, you had a trauma?
Yeah, like, because I really wanted to become a nun.
And then you found out they didn't deserve you. They weren't high enough standard. One thing she told me, Ginny, is as a young girl, a little girl, she would not play with anybody. She would just draw and paint and create. And in school, she would, what the fuck are we sitting here for? These people know nothing. And she's like 6 years old. And she'd get the highest marks in the school, but she had no respect for it and would not run around and do games. She just created from very early age. Is that true, what I just said?
Yes, and I was sent to the psychiatrist because they thought maybe I could not understand or I had some type of trouble. So I had to make a lot of tests.
Yeah, and you were born in the 60s, so this is in the ridiculous 70s of psychiatry.
The doctor told my parents, like, well, no, she's only very creative. She should maybe study some art or music. And they were looking at me like I'm sick or crazy or something. Like, they were like, oh, my God, no. But then they
forced you to play the violin? That's when they got
you? Yeah, because my grandfather had a violin, so they didn't ask me. There was a violin, so they sent me to violin lessons. And that was good because I discovered then electronic music when I had to go to the violin class. There was an electronic music studio there, and I would listen to all these weird sounds coming out of this studio.
Before her class, she'd purposely go there ahead of time to listen to the weird sounds. And what were you, 9 years old?
11. And, yes, I would knock there, and every day I wanted just to be there and listen. And after a while, they got so tired of me that they gave me the telephone of a composer. And he said, well, he has his own studio. Maybe he can help you. His name is Antonio Rusek, and I went to see him. He thought it was weird that somebody so young had interest in academic, experimental electronic music, and he let me then work in his studio, and then I went to America, and I bought my own equipment, and then when I came back, I went back to his studio and worked there for 10 years.
That's when you're 15 to 25. You go to Washington, father gets stationed in Washington, 12 to 15, then you go back. From 15 to 25,
yeah.
You're saying you work with this guy. And they were Gurdjieffians, so she heard all that knowledge.
Yeah, he was into Gurdjieff. And he would talk about the ray of creation and how everything is harmony and sound.
And the octaves.
Those were my friends.
You sent a bunch of videos to Bob, different ones of you doing some of your electronic music and...
No. In a rock context. This is important. She gets into the rock world in her late teens.
Yes, because we needed to buy equipment, and we also started playing techno and pop. When I was younger, I thought that was fun, but then when I did it, I didn't like this whole environment and the nightlife and the clubs and all this. But I had to do it, and I did it.
So you have this person who really wants to be a nun, forced to be a rock, hang out with the decadents of nightclubs.
Which one of these videos, Roxy, do you like the most?
I don't really like them because that was something I did when I was a teenager.
And it's kind of simple, right?
Yes.
Simple rocks. It's like, you know, if you have a complex knowledge, you want the more complex stuff. I have a friend who's a pretty good musician. He used to like it when he was a teenager, but he can't listen to the R&B stuff I play. It's too simple. He has to listen to fusion jazz and the complexities of it. That's what attracts his mind. He can't listen to the emotional stuff I play.
Yes, I was more into experimental electronic music, and I think that's fun when you do it yourself, but maybe for people listening, it's not that fun.
It's not appealing to impose it on people.
Yeah, it's like maybe too complex. They just hear a bunch of noise. And maybe because we're used to that, we can hear a lot happening and how things are evolving and wherever there is a lot.
Yeah, it's the old statement, Roxy, an Eskimo sees 50 kinds of snow, and, you know, the foreigner sees just white snow. Doesn't see the 50 kinds. And, you know, I played a new McLuhan clip on last Saturday. I hadn't heard it. I said, okay, this is the next one to play. We played it. And it's McLuhan in 1968 discussing with Tony Schwartz electronic music. They're pointing out how it's nonlinear. Now, most people want a melody, a linear, a story. And so there's no story in electronic music, but it's tactile, proprioceptive. So she got to hear McLuhan discuss the electronic music. I didn't even, never heard it before. That was a nice synchronicity there.
Yes, because I was born in 68.
So I had an instant theory. When she heard McLuhan talking about electronic composition, that's when she said, I'm going to go and do some unrealized creations around that stuff.
Now
and then, you
electronic
know,
is passé. We have something else.
Yes, we have new music, the big note. So it's 46 years later, you hear what got you attracted in 68, back in your past.
Yes, and I think the music helped me survive this planet, because otherwise I never wanted to have a family, children, and do what most people want to do, and that was like my salvation, abstract noise and sound.
Roxy knew too much, Ginny. She saw and knew too much.
When I met Bob, I had the impression I was just preparing to meet you.
To make the real
like
music.
Everything I thought was just like...
idling at the bus station, waiting for the train to come in.
For something. Yeah. Yeah, we were just like entertaining ourselves until we found Ion.
And then life really began.
What we planned, why we did, we came for to...
Yes, we planned. I said, I ain't doing nothing with you unless you get into McLuhan. I was saying that back before we were born, saying that to her. We're not working together unless you get your shit together and you understand Finnegan's Wake. That's probably my condition. And then Roxy said, well, there's no Finnegan's Wake. It hasn't been written yet. And I said, well, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's coming.
Like, in one of the videos was the first time, for example, I heard about the septet and the octet.
Septet and octet.
I'm like, yes. Wow! I was just like in awe, like, what? There's always things that I haven't even imagined. And I'm like, I want to be in the octet. It's like... I want completion. I want to reach this. And I know, because we have the drops and the isel, and these are things that exist. It's not fiction. It's not believing. It's things we can experience. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, no family for Roxy. You know what she told me, Ginny? When she heard Ion say... relationships are not required. She says, I'm in.
as a woman, you have all this pressure, like you have to be in a relationship and have children. And when you don't have this interest, I was like, it's the first time I'm understanding.
Yeah, she understood herself.
I felt like, yes, it's not required.
Yeah, like Roxy faked her marriage, her first marriage, and then the second guy was like she didn't do a normal relating to her husband.
Yeah, I was trying to have a normal life and be normal like everybody else, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, quite early in the relationship, you know. She had the alibi of being an artist and making stuff, so she had an excuse to be away a lot from the domestic home. Her third lover, the one up till a few years ago, remember how she heard the Ion? She couldn't stop doing it. She was listening to Ion for 10 hours a day or something. And her boyfriend, live-in boyfriend, could not stand Ion's voice and went nuts trying to understand why she was fascinated with this voice that she was listening to.
Mm.
Yes, and he's Spanish, so he could not understand. I tried to explain him, but as Ion says, when you're not there, you're not there.
Yeah.
And I even got the dress for him, and he didn't want to take something he didn't know what's in there. And he thought I was crazy that I was taking something without knowing
what it was
in those things. And I said, hey, do you know what's in the air you breathe or in the food you eat? No, you don't know. It was deleted.
Yeah, when she eliminated everything. She dedicated herself to celibacy 3 years ago.
I think it will be very hard to be with somebody, and for example, if you want to listen to the whole Payday the whole weekend, and maybe people want to go out or whatever, it's like, you're going to stay here the whole weekend listening to that? And I don't want to explain or to
justify.
You know, I just want to do it. Before I openly engaged, like I say, I came out of the closet, I heard a lot all these years, and it's always evolving, and it's coherent, and it's intelligent, and it's real. You see, the things are not fiction, are there. So sometimes I'm very sad, like people choose not to ascend, not to do it now, like Ion said last time and last Payday, okay, if you want to take 1,000 more years, it's your decision. But I was like, how could they choose to take 1,000 more years, but it's their decision? But I want to do it now. I want to graduate from this environment.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And having fun.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Anything else you want to add, or Bob, you want to add before we wrap up the show today?
Well, I guess in Roxy's case, we ain't seen nothing yet.
Right. She's only on video 30, and she's got 129 clips. So Roxy will be around making her incredible contribution. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Roxanne. I really appreciate it. And I know that you've done a lot to really open up people's understanding and awareness. I know people love the videos. A lot of people have talked to me about it and said that they've enjoyed the engagement, and they love seeing Bob in Berlin and what you guys did together, and it's been fantastic. So thank you for everything you're doing, and thanks for coming on and talking with me today, and thanks, Bob, for joining us. It's been great.
Yeah, very nice show.
Thank you both.